Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or evening, that is. This is Chocolate Lady 64, and I'm hoping everyone is having a great week. It's almost over, one more day, and it will be over for this week, this month, this year actually is going by real fast. Tonight, you guys, I have Miss Nadia Matthews from the Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program, and I'm going to basically let her talk today. So if you guys hear me talking, call in and tell me to shut up. But Miss Nadia, how are you doing today, sweetie?
I am doing awesome. I'm doing awesome.
So tell me about the Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program. First of all, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, again, my name is Nadia Matthews. I am an author, but I also handle the public relations for Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program, which is a cause that I am more than proud about and very dedicated to. Basically, the organization was created from something that happened to the organizer or the founder, Roderick Cunningham. So I'm going to tell you just a little bit about his story, which I think is very, very dynamic in and of itself. Roderick's mother, Beverly Cunningham, the foundation was created in her honor. And basically what happened to her in October 27, 2009, his mother was brutally murdered by her husband of over 11 years. And she was shot. He found her. He heard the gunshot, and he ran in the room, and he found his mother laying in the bed. His stepfather had shot her. And what he found out after the horrible, horrible tragedy was that his mother had been suffering with domestic violence for years, and he had no idea. Okay. And, of course, and it was just so sad. And so what happened was Roderick decided, you know what, out of this pain has to come something. Beverly Cunningham Brown, she was not only a minister for Church of God in Christ, but she also had her own daycare. And so many children she took care of day after day, and nobody knew that at home she was struggling with the pains that she was struggling with, not even her son. She not only took care of the children at the daycare center, but she also had a special needs son at home that she was taking care of who was an adult. So she just had so many things going on, and after Roderick lost her, he said, well, you know what, I got to do something in my mother's honor. So that's how Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program was developed. And what it has grown to be is a center or a facility where we're going to actually help children of victims that have survived domestic violence. And so many times we forget about those children. We forget that it wasn't just a mother that was abused terribly. Those children were the ones that saw daddy hitting mommy. And in a lot of cases, these children, maybe the father didn't hit the child, so that child was further confused because he saw that he saw his mother being abused, but at the same time, this was his dad. So there was a view that, you know, every child looks up to their father. So the reason why we started this program and he started this program is to really have a center that's going to serve as advocates or the middleman, so that we can start helping some of these children come out of these situations and return to a life of normalcy. The other part of that is a lot of the parents, and statistics will show you that a lot of these parents take up for these fathers. And so these children suffer for years in these type of situations. And if the mother does have an opportunity to connect with an organization similar to ours or like some other domestic violence centers in Atlanta or all over the world, the children, the parents, it's so hard to get your life back together. And that's the other part of the services that we offer with Beverly Cunningham Outreach. We offer a service where we'll help you transition back into a normal life because that dysfunction has become function. It has become normal to the children. It has become normal to the mothers who have suffered through this. And I'm not just an advocate for this program, but I'm also a survivor of domestic violence. So, of course, this hits me at home. It definitely hits me at home.
Oh, that is a fascinating story. My God. And it's so awesome that you guys are doing this because we don't, most of the time, don't think about the kids. What happens with the kids, domestic violence? And we forget about them, and there's nobody there for them. You know, we throw them in foster homes, or we'll give them to the other parts of the families. And sometimes they even go to the family of the perpetrator or the person who actually did them. And they have to deal with that. They're the innocent ones in this whole mess that these, I mean, two adults. Most of the time, the mother doesn't, she's doing the best she can. She's trying to make everything happen that is supposed to happen, trying to keep them pleased. But when you marry somebody with those issues that you never paid attention to or you might have known but you were afraid to mention them because of the violence, you know, it does something to me because my thing is, you know, you want to get out of it, but you have no outlet.
Yes, you know? And you have no, and I'm so glad that you said that. He had an inaugural dinner last year. And I remember getting up, and I remember telling my testimony and telling my story about what I had suffered through. And I told them, I said, listen, the women, they want to get, a lot of the women, probably 60 to 70% of these women want out of these relationships, but they have no path. They have absolutely no idea because they are struggling with the worst self-esteem. And that man, when he's hitting them, when he's knocking them down, when he's pushing them, when he's intimidating them, because, listeners, it's not just him punching you in the face. When he's intimidating you or manipulating you, that is a form of abuse. So when he's doing these things to her, he's also belittling her, and she feels like, you know what, there is no other way but you. You are the only person that can save me. So she's looking at him, and even though he's the abuser and the perpetrator, she has no path. She has no light. So that's what we want to do is we want to offer her a light. We want to offer you a path and some direction and some strength because coming out of that situation, I have to be honest with you, I was very, very blessed. Because I had a great support system, and I don't take that for granted. You know, I don't take it for granted that I had some sisters and some my parents and friends that were there to catch me and say, okay, well, we're going to pay your rent. Because I had no idea how to pay bills. I had no idea how to balance a checkbook. I had no idea how to do anything. And a lot of these women that are suffering are not only suffering emotionally, but they're also suffering financially.
Tell me about your story, Nadia. Tell me about your story.
Absolutely. Well, I was married for about 6 years, and during my marriage, I suffered several things. I suffered the domestic violence and the intimidation of my ex, and also the title of my book is called How I Let Her Steal My Husband. And it's a kind of a play on words because I'm telling you that I was in an abusive situation, but then I'm saying how I let her steal. It's kind of a play on words. What my book is about is the things that I suffered in my marriage and the bad choices that I made. Even in the very beginning of the process, you said it so good when you said that we see it, we saw it, but we ignored it. And so when I first met him, I thought he was just the greatest thing ever, and he was in the church. And so over time, what I thought was a good Christian man began to turn. After we had been married for about a year, I found out our house was being foreclosed on. That was pretty dramatic. And then a few years after that, after the fighting and the abuse and the punching, because at first really it started with the holes in the walls. It wasn't originally my faith or pushing me or whatever. It was really the holes and breaking up the things in our house. And so I would just go, wow, he's just tearing up my house. Like, I have no idea what to do. And so I suffered with that. And after a while, my eyes began to stray, and so did his. And so he became to be unfaithful. And so he was unfaithful a few times. Yeah. And so, And finally, my last straw was the moment when I looked in the mirror. Well, I was at church, and one of the sisters was there with me, and she was giving me makeup to cover up my black eye. But there's a couple of things that were very scary about that situation. The first thing was, number one, that she knew how to cover up my eye because she had herself struggled through that same type of abuse. But then the pastor at the time told him that if you hit her again, I'm going to tell her to leave you. And so she knew that over the time I had been struggling with him and the abuse and the violence. And now when I think about that, she said, if you hit her again, I'm going to tell her to leave you. And silly of me not to think, why should I wait for you to tell me to leave an abusive situation? Why wouldn't I have enough sense to get up and get out of it for the sake of my children? Because we had two children. We had lost one already. Why wouldn't I get up and leave that situation? So, that's a part of my story. And then my book further goes on to talk about surviving divorce, surviving the emotional, surviving the physical and the financial, and coming back on the other side of a happy ending. And I am just in a wonderful place in my life. I'm so blessed and so honored to be able to work with Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program and not only share my story, but share me overcoming. Because a lot of times when we're talking to these young women, it's easy to sit down and hug and coddle them, but we're not providing, a lot of the centers are not providing a solution, and that's something that Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program does, is we offer these women the path and the solution. And then I'm able to come in and say, ladies, it's life after the abuse. It's life. It's a better life. It's you learn how to make better choices, and you learn how to make better decisions so that you're able to meet a great man like the man that God gave me now.
And you know what, too, Nadia, to think about what you just said, what we don't understand is, even with the police, the first thing they want to tell you is get a protective order. What is a piece of paper?
That does not work. that don't work. Mm-mm. And it doesn't keep them away. The police got to get them hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And because they think a lot of times, it's our fault too, in a sense. Because what we do is we'll get a PPO, they'll go through all the paperwork to do whatever they got to do, and then guess what? That weekend,
we go back
together, and everything is fine.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad thing is that they go back. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
It's not
we've
just
got
a problem.
We've got to fix that. I think that's huge what you're saying. That's the key what you're saying right there, is they keep going back.
They keep going back to that cycle.
And it's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle. And then they not only go back, if they don't go back to that abuser, then they get back into another abusive relationship.
It's just a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle, and it's sad because women, there's no excuse for the empowerment.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? For not having the empowerment or not receiving it or even finding ways to get to the empowerment and the knowledge. There's no excuse. Unless, in a sense it is, because if he's got you abandoned away from everybody, he doesn't isolated away from everybody, you're not allowed to, and you can't do this, you can't do that. Yes, I truly, 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 truly can see that. But if you have an outlet, then you need, if you got family members coming to you and saying, you know what, if you come stay with me tonight, he won't get to you, we promise you. And you're like, no, I'm not going to go. Then you know what? Sometimes families do give up on them. And that's where the support system breaks down, too. Because the family is tired of you allowing them to beat you up. They come over there and rescue you, and you go right back. So that's hard. And that's because you don't know anything else. He's been doing this for years to you. You haven't broken out of that yet. And that's sad, that is so sad, that we get to the point where we don't want to fight, we give up. Because I think a lot of women want to, in their hearts, want to fight and move and go on with their life, but they give up. They've been beaten down so that they give up. And you know what? There needs to be help for the man, too. He needs help,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely. And I that he needs that rehabilitation as well. I think what I'd love to see us do is really focus on the individual and teaching them how to love themselves, because it's a lack of self-worth to sit in a relationship with somebody for a number of years in abusive situations. And I can't speak it for everybody else. Let me just say, for me, it was a lack of self-worth. And I didn't think I was valuable enough, not only to myself, but I didn't think I would be valuable enough to another individual, another man. And so I think a lot of it has to do with them just feeling like I'm nothing. So I like the fact that we're not only advocates, but we're also teaching these women. We're helping them. We're gonna have a fashion show, hopefully, in a couple of months. We're in the planning stages, but the theme is look what we're wearing now. And I thought about in it. I love it. And what I love about that, just that term, is I remember the black eye. I remember the pain of it. I remember it being my left eye. I mean, this is literally, it's 2011, so it's over four years ago. I still remember that pain. I still remember how that felt, that embarrassment, people watching me with that black eye. And I was wearing it like it was a shirt, an accessory. Mm-hmm. And so the theme of look what we're wearing now is we're wearing pride. We're wearing dignity. We're wearing that self-worth. Awesome. We love us. We love us, you know, and actually soon, April the 5th, we're having an event at Liquid Internet Cafe, which is 294 Walker Street. It's in Atlanta, Georgia. It's a fundraiser for Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program, and the theme of the event is embracing the love within, because it goes back to what we've been saying. We've got to learn how to embrace the love within. I don't know if you've heard of the young lady, Chyna McGarity. She is beautiful, beautiful. She's our keynote speaker. She was a plus-size model, and she also suffered years of domestic violence. And so she's the creator of PurpleCasket.com, and she's just a great woman, and we're really excited to have her. We also are going to be having that night the Vision Dance Team. They've been all over television. Awesome dance team. And then we've got the Majestic Band featuring Dre Scott, and it's going to be a phenomenal fundraiser, a phenomenal event to help build us, because we are in the beginning stages. So we've got everything done. The 501c3 is done. Now what we need is to bring in those extra funds so that we can bring these women in and provide the services that we've been talking about.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Yes.
That would be awesome.
We are very excited about the event.
I mean, you sound like you have a passion for this.
Yeah.
I hear it in your voice. You have a deep passion to help these women and these kids. The fire, and the whole. I wrote this poem, and I wrote it a long time ago. And I say this: I guess when you lock somebody in the house, I guess that is a form of domestic violence, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's intimidation.
I've never been in a relationship where I was in domestic violence, but I had a best friend that I had to break up a lot of fights between her, and I would always grab the kids, and then I'd take them to my house, and I'm begging them to stop fighting. They went through that for 7 years, and she finally divorced them after 7 years. But I mean, being punched in the face when I was just trying to break them up, having to step out the way, you know, getting my arm twisted, you know. So it's like I was part of that. It's a domestic violence, even though I wasn't supposed to be, you know.
Right, right.
I'm not laughing. I'm not laughing at.
Right.
How,
the things that you went through.
To be in the middle of all of that and seeing this, and these are two upstanding people. We were all in the military at the same time, and they go to work every day. Nobody even had the slightest idea what they were doing when they came home. That I had to go over and break up the fight. You know, you never think that you walk in a house, they got a beautiful home, but it's tore up from one end to the other because they've been fighting all, like, hours of fighting. So, and I'm grabbing the kids and taking the kids. So, and she would let him go. And she getting mad at me. I was like, why you keep taking him back? Why you keep, let him move in the bag. Let him stay in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And before you know it, fixing dinner and everything is fine again. So, you know, you're being part of that. It's kind of hard, too, because you're trying to figure out why she keeps going back, why she keeps taking them back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not in it. You don't know how she's feeling. And she kept saying, he's my husband. I can't
right.
do that. He's my husband. You know, we get that he's my husband and keep forgetting that he's a man that's beating your butt.
Right.
Right now he is. You know, we're not
right.
thinking about
right.
the ideal that he... he's the one who's beating your butt, even though he's your quote-unquote husband, you know?
Right, right.
It's amazing. When you said something about your black eye, Nadia, and it just made me think about this poem, and I'm sorry, I got to read this to you because this is to you.
No, read it, read it. I want to hear it.
It's called The Empty World I Live In. This empty world I live in is cold and dark and clammy like a cellar of an old house. It's also full of destitution and despair. Is there ever going to be an ending to the fussing, the fighting, the screaming, the slamming of doors? And worst of all, the beatings my body can no longer endure. I try so hard not to make them angry, but lately it's gotten worse. I don't know who to talk to. Who would listen to me? You see, I'm supposed to be stupid. Well, that is what I'm told constantly. I can't talk on the phone simply because he will know. I'm afraid to go outside because of my appearance. I look as though I just stepped out of the ring with Mike Tyson. I look in the mirror at my once flawless dark skin, now scarred forever. My once shiny brown eyes, now fit in two black rings. My once cute nose, now broken in two places, crooked on my face. My once soft lid, now cracked and scabby with dry from raising my voice, which earned me a punch. I look at my once healthy long nails, now cracked, split, and bitten from worrying about the cause of my next beating. I reach to touch my hair, once thick and long, now short and brittle. I look at this ragged dress I wear. Oh, how ugly it is. But it fits me, personality, and my world. Shallow and empty.
Mm.
I sometimes wonder what turned him into this monster. This empty world I live in needs to be filled with love again. You know, I miss him when he goes away because I realize he created this empty world I live in.
Wow.
You like that?
Yes. And I think that really captures it because
yes.
they feel empty when he leaves, even though he's abusive, even though he tears them down, and they know that it's not good for them. But when he leaves, it's like nobody is there. They're forced, and I think this is a lot of it, too, is when I left, I was forced
okay.
to deal with Nadia.
Yes.
I was
yes.
forced
yes.
to deal with me and my issues and my lack of self-esteem and my lack of self-worth. And that's what
yeah.
happens, is that you have a mirror, and now I have to see the choices that I made. Like, it goes back to what we said in the very beginning, that we see it. We saw
uh-huh.
the destruction. We saw the habits that were unhealthy, yet we made the decision to stay in the relationship. And you're forced
exactly.
to say, I chose this. That's what that
exactly.
empty and that empty place and that silence does. You are, I love that. That's awesome. Do you write poetry and things?
Yeah. I write okay. poetry. I write everything.
Well, you need
I
to publish
not,
a book. I do that too.
Yeah, I publish. I'm published.
Okay, awesome, awesome.
But I'm published, my book is more of a, the last book I wrote, it's called White Dove, and it's about a young lady who has schizophrenia. The one before that was like one of those Zane type books.
Okay,
it's called.
I got you.
Okay, so that one I just wrote. I'm waiting for my editor to send me back my White Dove so that I can go ahead and publish it. And what I do with my books is I have five people that I let review the book, and I get their comments. And when they send me back their comments, then that assures me that, you know what, Lita, you're in the right direction. So far, I've gotten real good reviews from my books, and they're just like waiting. Well, when are you going to get me White Dove? I can't wait for White Dove. So I'm waiting for that one to come out. But we're not talking about me, Nadia. We're talking about you.
I know. I'm sorry. Focus. I will tell you something else. Beverly Cunningham Brown, before she went home, she wrote a book. She wrote a book called So Many Questions, Potty Training and More, because she owned a daycare. And so she worked in DeKalb County. So her book will actually, the soft published date for her book is going to be April 5th at the Embracing the Love Within fundraiser dinner. So we look forward to all of your listeners having an opportunity to come out and give to this wonderful cause that's not only going to help the women, but it's also going to help the children. And it's proven that children who have been in domestic violence situations, they have become abusers or the abused. So we have to break this cycle. We have to definitely break this cycle. Have you ever heard of L.Y. Marlowe? She wrote Color Me Butterfly.
She's
a survivor of 5 generations of domestic violence. And I had an opportunity to hear her speak at the inaugural dinner for Beverly Cunningham Outreach. And one of the things that she said that struck me the most was that when she said, I'm a 5-generation survivor of domestic violence, her own daughter survived it as well. And she said, you know, why didn't my mother tell me that she had survived it? Why didn't I tell my daughter that I had survived this? And what really prompted her to start Saving Promise, and Promise is her granddaughter's name, the foundation is in too, you know, that's why she did it, was, you know, knowing that she wanted to stop the silence about domestic violence in her family. And she wanted to, she said, this is when it's going to stop. And I think that we have to do a better job of educating our children about it. And I talk to my daughters about, you don't let somebody do this, and you don't let them do this, and you don't, you know what I mean? So, because I don't want my daughters to struggle with the things that I struggled with when I was married.
So you let them know warning signs.
Absolutely. And my babies are very young. They're very, very young. So they're... The only fortunate part about that was that my children were very young when I divorced, and they don't remember any of the violence and the holes in the walls or anything. My daughters my oldest child is 7, and then I have a 6-year-old. Those are the children from my previous marriage, and I have a 3-year-old. But the 7 and 6, they don't know anything. They ever had. They just think daddy hung the moon, and that's it. And I leave it that way because I don't want to taint their impression of him, and so I'm very protective of them, very protective of them. But I think we have to train, and as they get older, I'll talk to them more about, you know, boys don't hit, and you are beautiful, and you are wonderful, and you don't need anybody to validate you. And I think that was the reason I got into a relationship to begin with. I talk about that a lot in my book, getting into relationships to validate yourself. And that's how you start an unhealthy relationship, which can turn into an abusive relationship.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. You said you're married again?
I am.
Okay. So tell me this. Coming from the domestic violence and trying to find yourself, and getting back on track, how easy was it for you to get back out and date?
It was hard. And to just be transparent, the fleshly part of me, it was easy. But the emotion, it was very hard for me to establish an emotional relationship with someone because I had come out of such an unhealthy relationship. I think the number one thing that I had to do was reestablish my own credibility to me. And I had to understand my own validity and how beautiful I was. And I had to take the time to value me. So I actually moved away to Nashville. And I spent a whole year in Nashville laying on my face before God and saying, God, who am I to you? And and I learned that God rejoices over me, and that I was the apple of God's eye, and that I was his princess, and I was fearfully and wonderfully made. And I reaffirmed the promises of God to myself. And I think that that's what started the process of healing for me. And then after I was able to kind of go through that process and allow God to heal me, when I got into a relationship, I paid attention. And then I told myself this: I will not settle for anything. And I'm a firm believer of this, and I hope your listeners hear this. I love to say this. Men will only treat you as bad as you allow them to treat you.
Exactly.
So if you let it be permissible to come in at 3 o'clock in the morning with no phone call, then you cannot get angry at him for coming in every weekend at 3 a.m. because you made it permissible in the beginning.
In the beginning,
so,
that's right.
So, you know what I mean? So I paid attention. And my husband and I, we're very intentional with our relationship. So we're very purposeful. We understand why God put us together. We had a vision when we got married, before we got married, and we're working the vision that God has given us. And I think that's what makes our relationship work let me say this, because it wasn't easy. When I first got married, I was checking cell phones, Facebook. I'm trying to hack into your Twitter. I'm trying to get all the intel I can. And so it was a process for me. We've been married over a year, a little bit over a year. March 5th was our one-year anniversary and so, of being married. And so I just had to take every day as it was. And then when I'm in an uncomfortable situation or we're having a passionate disagreement, because we don't fight, we have a passionate disagreement, then, you know, At first, when we'd have a passionate disagreement, I would flinch because I would think that he was going to hit me. And a couple of times he said, "Hey, I'm not going to hit you. That's not going to happen. I'm not going to put my hands on you." And I think a couple of times of him saying that to me put me at ease. So if we got into a disagreement, I wouldn't flinch, or I wouldn't go looking for a weapon or something to protect myself, because that did take time, and I think that's that returning to a normal, functional, healthy relationship. And then the partner that you're with, if you come out of a domestic violence situation and you're ready to pursue a relationship, I think you have to be very honest with your partner. I'm all about honesty. I'm all about, you know, this doesn't feel good to me. This is uncomfortable to me, being honest with them so that you can heal together. And if the person that you're with doesn't want that honesty or doesn't accept it or thinks it's too much, then that's not the person that you need to be with. Because my husband had to be very patient. When I hacked into his email account, I was sure he was going to leave me. I was like, I hacked into your account. And I remember him going, "Baby, you got to trust me. I'm not him." And the first thing he said to me was, "I'm not him."
Yeah. Yes.
And I said, "Oh, you are so right with your fine self." but I had to learn that it was absolutely a process. So just, ladies, you know, my best advice to you is to take it slow, learn who you are, know who you are before you get in a relationship, so you don't define yourself by him or your relationship. Mm-hmm. And then when you get in that relationship, know what your boundaries are. Know what your standards are. If you don't like to wear short skirts and tights or whatever, don't just wear short skirts and tights because he says he likes that. I believe in compromise, but you have to know what you like and what you don't like. I think we get lost in relationships, and, again, that's how we turn into the unhealthy relationships and how those things can turn into where he's controlling you, and then it can turn into abuse.
Yep, that is so true. Now, with teenagers, tell me more about the teenagers, the young girls. Have you done any group sessions with them yet?
Not yet. It's coming. It's in the works. That's a part of the process. There is absolutely an investment end of having a nonprofit. So you have to have people who are able to volunteer their time, their finances, and that's been the thing that we've been really working towards in the last 6 months. We've got everything down on paper. We've got the center. It's in Lithonia. Mm-hmm. Now we already have the counselors. Now we're ready to do is sign and write and go. You know, you don't just it's a building process. So we're almost there. We have been doing some outings. We have been we went to the circus, and then we had a really great time. We've done some picnics. We did a hockey game. So we've been doing a lot of events outside of the facility. But coming in this next quarter, we're going to really get down to some intensive group counseling. And we want to start really a kind of a support group. Because that's another thing. When a child has suffered through domestic violence, they feel like they're the only one.
Yeah.
So we want to provide them with other people, that other young people that they can talk to amongst themselves that are going to be able to help them, especially individuals who've come out of the abuse. That's critical. That's critical. Having somebody to talk to that's not just an adult, because teenagers think that adults don't know anything. Because I remember how I used to think. And I would say, I'm in this world and on this planet all by myself, and mommy, you're just against me. Like, you are out to take my life and make it yours, and you know what I mean? And so when you have someone that is the same age saying, you can come out of this, I came out of this, and my mom is doing so much better, and blah, 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 that will provide some comfort and some support to them. So that's what we're in the building process of right now.
See, that's awesome. And I wish that you guys and other groups can get together and do, like, one big, huge program. I think that would be so awesome. See, I'm here in Louisiana. And the thing with Louisiana, they're trying to get better, but they're, like, still 20 years behind. In Louisiana, we used to be considered property. We weren't considered, a wife wasn't considered a separate person. You know that. The domestic violence, I went through the class probably about 6-7 years ago, and it's written that actually we were considered property. So you didn't get nobody's business. Family didn't get involved if you was getting your butt kicked. Nobody was allowed to get involved. The police didn't get involved. Nobody got involved. So Louisiana is getting better, but they're not where they should be when it comes to domestic violence. They're not there yet. Because I know, like, the state of Kansas, they automatically, when you call them out, they automatically, somebody going with them. They're not going to sit there and argue back and forth with you. Somebody going with them when they come. The laws have to change. And no matter how many people die, how many victims we have out there, the law has to change. You have to have judges that are not, because sometimes the judges, they're going home beating their wives. So they're going to have a whole different attitude when it comes to you. Men just, the whole thing is, we have to start with our young men.
Yes.
Our young men need to understand how important and what a woman really means to them, or a girl means to them. They have to know what we are. They don't value us. That's the whole point. And when they don't value us, and on top of them not valuing us, we don't value ourselves. That is a mixture of danger.
That's a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely. And we need to start with our young girls by teaching them to love yourself. Look in the mirror and say, yeah, I look a little different from the other girls, but you know what? I'm beautiful.
Yes, that's right. And teaching them how to be independent. Teaching them to be independent, I think is, and I think we get independent and the feminist movement and all of this confused. I think that you just need to teach your child, or teach your young lady, that it's okay to be different. It's okay to be thick, skinny, big, fat. It's okay to have short hair, long hair. You are beautiful. No matter what is, and I think what we spent a lot of time in, and we should give a little bit of thanks to television to this, is that our children see an image. They think an image is beautiful. They haven't learned how to value intelligence yet. And what I tell my girls, and this might not be the nicest thing, and I tell them all the time, you're beautiful, but beautiful girls aren't stupid. Do you understand? They look at me like, mommy.
Yeah.
Because I want them to understand that your intelligence comes from the fact that you can read at 6 years old. Your intelligence comes from the fact that you understand what mommy is saying. You're able to articulate yourself well. It's not about what you have on. It's not about the tennis shoes or the sandals or the way mommy lets you do your hair. It's about what's on the inside. If we spent more time building our children from the inside out instead of the outside in, then they would have a better grasp on who they are. So when a boy says, and my husband does this all the time, I love it, is that he constantly is telling the girls how beautiful they are. And my three-year-old told me the other day, Mommy, I'm so pretty. And that is what I love. Yeah, she said, I'm just so pretty, Mommy. Oh, she picked up a picture of herself, and she said, oh, look at me, Mommy, I'm pretty. And that... to me, we think it's bougie, but that little girl is not going to be easily swayed by a little boy who says, you sure are pretty.
Yeah.
She might turn and say, I know, Mommy tells me that, Daddy tells me that, Grandma tells me that, and I know it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
She won't think of that as such a privilege like I did, because I thought when a boy said I was cute that I should hand him my panties. Well, I'm pretty. Here goes my panties. Where we going? You know, because that's I just didn't have that growing up. And then I just didn't have it on my own. So
exactly.
I spent a lot of time building them from the inside, and they tell me that they're CEOs and that they have their own company and all of that at that age. So when they get older, that's what they'll value. You know? That's what I'm working towards.
And you know what? That is so good that you're doing that to your little girls. Like, my sister does that to her daughters. She's always done that to her daughters, always tell them how beautiful they are and how. But, you know, so it comes to from how we were raised. And like you were saying, something about generational. If we don't break the cycle and tell our kids that they're beautiful, and I guess with me, I was a little different. I always considered myself different from everybody else. I always did. I have a big nose, and to them, to the society, that was they didn't like my big nose. I have big lips, you know, they didn't like my big lips. And I had to deal with self-esteem and insecurity, you know, basically all into my adult life. I didn't think I was pretty until I got into the military, when I realized that men really, really liked me. You know what I'm saying? I validated myself through the guys that I was with.
Right, exactly.
You know, and
exactly.
Because I did that, I had a lot of self-esteem problems. Because I didn't, you know, I did not, when I looked in the mirror, I didn't see this beautiful black woman or this beautiful black girl. I saw this ugly little thing with big nose and big lips. You know, I had to cultivate my own self and tell me how beautiful I am. And this is when you're grown. I was in my own home. My son was big. My son was a baby at the time. And I had to actually bring me out. But it took so long. You know what? And when people, if you knew me and the people that know me, they would never believe that I had self-esteem problems. Because of the way I am, I'm straightforward, I say what I got to say, and they would never believe that I was that way. But it took so much, I the molestation, sexual abuse, so I dealt with all of that in the same whim when it comes to me feeling good about me, you know.
Right.
And I think we all do that. As African-American women, period, we have a hard time with compliments, we have a hard time adjusting to who we are, you know, in our own skin. We always want to be somebody else or want to look like somebody else. And when you said what you said earlier, it just something went through my mind. I think of Halle Berry. Look at Halle Berry.
Right.
Here's a perfect example of an African-American woman that has everything, but she cannot keep a man. Why can't she keep a man?
That's right.
So it's not about the beauty. It's not about the outside. You can be beautiful as ever, but she can't keep a man. And I'm saying that not in a funny way.
I'm saying for us to realize
that this woman can have any man in the world.
Right.
She can't keep one. Every relationship she's been in has been a bad relationship. So that's why beauty is not it.
That's right. It's not. It can't be built on what's on the outside. We have to do what we have to do to train and teach them to reach inward, and not try to look on the outside. on the outside for it. So I absolutely agree with you. That was definitely a great example. She also suffered with domestic violence as well.
Right.
She is probably considered to be one of the most beautiful women in the world, and she herself struggled with that. So who knows? Who knows what type of internal issues she has?
And you think of everybody. Every girl wants to be. I've heard grown women say they want to be Beyonce. You can't be Beyonce.
Yeah.
Beyonce have a hard time being Beyonce. Believe it, she, all that prettiness, that's not always, when she go home, we don't know what she going through when she closed them doors.
Yep, that's it. You have no idea. So it's why we really have to train our children not to look at the media and not to look, because these people, you know, the shows are overly, you know, they're overly produced, and these women have live-in makeup artists, and they've got fake hair and fake breasts and fake bottoms and fake toenails and fingernails and eyelashes and collagen in their lips. Half of them are not real. And we have built so much on what you can go get at the store, at the beauty supply store on aisle 4, 5, and 9, than we have on what's on the inside. We just really have to do a better job. And I think when we stop doing that, when we stop building so much, and I think it starts with the parents, as we were just talking about. We tell our children what daddy should do, or what a man should do, or what his position in life should be by what we react to in our own house.
Exactly. That is so true. You are so right.
My daughter said something I thought was so good. And that kids, when they're young, they will be more honest. And she said to me, Mommy, why does daddy always, and she's saying daddy as in my husband, why does daddy always open the door for us? And I said, well, because that's what gentlemen do. And she said, but daddy doesn't, daddy being my ex-husband, doesn't open the door for mama.
She's stepmama.
And so she was like, and I said, well, you know, I don't know why, and that, you know, I don't know what to tell you, but this is how men are supposed to act. This is how they're supposed to open the door for you. They're supposed to do these things. So, you know, you have to be able to train them. And what we say is okay is what they're going to think is okay.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is.
When we stand up cursing each other out in front of the kids.
Oh, wow. That's good. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the other side of domestic violence. There's absolutely the situations when the man is intimidating the woman. But I am not an advocate of a woman getting in a man's face and belittling him. And especially in the African-American community, we have made it permissible for a woman to tell a man he is nothing but a piece of trash. And that same man is supposed to just say okay and just get up and walk away. I'm not saying condoning him hitting her at all, by no means, but at the same time, we need to train our young women that you're a lady, don't talk like that. And the same way you want him to respect you, you have to be able to give that same respect to him.
We don't teach that. See, because what happens is, I see mom and her boyfriends, because it don't always be dad. And her boyfriend, they go at it. She's checking his email. She's checking his phone and calling him. And I called you, and you didn't answer. And you being, he's calling her back and forth, and she's all in his face. And guess what? The daughter's standing in the doorway watching. So she gets her boyfriend, guess what? She's going to do exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same. Be over-demanding.
I'm not supposed to let a man talk to me any kind of way. My mom told me this, and you better, because I've actually watched girls, young girls, what they do is they start pecking. They start hitting on him. Little by little, she's hitting. Oh, you stop. And cussing him out in front of everybody. So you're already learning how to belittle him as a teenager.
Yes.
So then the relationship goes on, and then he's tired. Now, he don't let you peck on him and slap on him and act a fool. Now he's tired. Then that's when the violence, domestic violence is domestic violence, either way it goes.
Exactly.
She's being abusive toward him. No, now the tables are turning, and those punches is not more, no more him, her slapping him, it's more him punching her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes to that next level. But we have to teach our girls, no matter what, no, you're not supposed to let a man disrespect you, but it's a way
right.
that you respect yourself
right.
first before you go to check
right.
him.
Exactly. I definitely agree. We have to do a better job training and teaching. Just like that's a part of what we're going to do with Beverly Cunningham Outreach Program is train and teach. So we really the other part of the center or the other things that we really are excited about doing is reaching out into the schools in DeKalb County and starting to kind of mentor some of the young ladies and some of the young men with some of our volunteers. So if any of your listeners are looking for an organization to volunteer, we are definitely looking for people who are dedicated to teaching, to training, to developing. That's why the Bible says train them up in a way that they should go. It's not just about putting the word of God in them, but we need to train them the proper way to act because we can't depend on the school to give it to them, and we can't depend on the Disney Channel and BET and MTV to train and teach our children. We have to be the ones that do it. And if the mothers and fathers are not in the home or the grandmothers or they have an adult figure, then we want to have a mentorship program where we're going to be able to do that. And it's a little hard to get into the schools. Unless it's the month when domestic violence, where they target and they talk about teen violence, it's kind of hard to get into school. So we definitely need some advocates. So if you know anyone or if your listeners want to do it, please, please, please email me at nadia.mathews@yahoo.com or please don't hesitate to visit our website, which is www.bcop.org. Hit that contact us button and send us an email. We would love to have you to help us.
Oh, great. That is great. Nadia, it was so great talking to you. Let me ask you something else before we go. You deal with the women. What about men who are domestic who are part of or involved in a domestic violence relationship?
Meaning that they are the abuser or the abused?
They're abused.
Okay. Right now, our organization works with the children and the women. We are aware that there is 20 to 30% of the victims are men. And it's not a reported thing, but we don't – currently, Beverly Cunningham Outreach doesn't have the resources to do that, but in the future we are absolutely looking to expand because I think I know that it's a situation and I know that it is a part of that horrible tragedy and epidemic, but right now we're not doing it, but it should definitely be handled, definitely be dealt with.
Okay. Well, I'm going to call you Beverly. I apologize, Nadia.
It's okay.
I thank you so much. You have been such an inspiration. And the information you have is awesome. It is awesome.
Thank you so much. I have enjoyed myself thoroughly. Thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to talking to you soon and really coming back to talk about some my book and some of the future projects that we have going on. So, again, I just want to, if I just could interject this really quick, we want to invite you all again. April the 5th is going to be at Liquid Internet Cafe, 294 Walker Street. All of the information is on www.bcop.org. So we look forward to seeing you there. The cost for the event is only $20. We spend that on nothing. And now we should spend it on a great cause to help women and help children.
Exactly. That is lovely. And I thank you again, sweetie. And I wish I could come, being here in Louisiana. I would surely wish I could come. That would be that'd be an awesome event for me.
Oh, maybe I could come. Well, we'll have to send you the book, and I'll have to keep in contact with you so I can let you know when we start doing some more events.
Yes, that would be lovely. And also with your book, I'm inviting you back to do the book anyway, and we'll talk more about your book then, okay?
Perfect. Well, I look forward to talking to you soon.
Okay, thank you again.
Thank you. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye, sweetie.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.